I work with critters, the kind that don't belong where they've ended up. Officially, my title on my business cards is Exotic Invasive Species Management. For example, I chase down iguanas on Miami golf courses and pry pythons from the Everglades. It's a good living down here. This thing I'm about to tell you about happened down in the swamps of Florida, near the Everglades National Park, a real wild place where the buzz of airboats and the crazy power of the cypress trees can make you believe in just about anything. A call came in about something picking off raccoons and gators in a way that didn't add up. No tracks, just parts and pieces of the animals left behind. The locals were spooked and kept talking about an unknown creature. I don't buy into the supernatural. Give me something I can see, touch, and trap. But these folks were looking at me like I was their last hope, so I agreed to check it out. I went out there in my truck, tools in the back, and ready to catch some sick or rabid animal. The day was closing out as I reached the swamps, which are also a hotbed for mosquitoes. I met with the guy who called me, a guy named Joe. He was a straight shooter, talked about the balance of nature, and how this thing, whatever it was throwing it off. Joe didn't use the words unidentifiable creature or cryptid when he talked to me. He didn't have to. His tone said enough. It was like he was trying to warn me without scaring me off. I told him I'd do what I could, set up some cameras and look for prints or patterns. Sunset in the Everglades is something else. The sky turns crazy colors, and the water catches the light in a way that's like nowhere else. It can even be peaceful until it's not. That night, as the swamp came alive, I felt something. And this was like being underwater. The feeling was muffled and heavy. I got to work setting everything up, all while looking around the area for any clues. I was focusing in crack and corners, and behind the vegetation, and that's when I saw it, between the gnarled roots of a mangrove tree. It was human-shaped, but it was no human at all. This thing had the outline of a man, but it was wrong, distorted. Its eyes were crazy too. They were too bright, like the glare of headlights. I remember squinting, trying to make sense of the shape that I was seeing in the mangroves. Its form was very concerning to me, like the way it seemed to flicker with wind, along with the heavy scent of mud and decay. It wasn't just the outline that was wrong. It was as if the creature was struggling to maintain a shape. The limbs were elongated in places they shouldn't have been, and the torso seemed to twist unnaturally, like a warped tree. And the eyes were too intense, piercing through the darkness with a brightness that doesn't exist in anything that's alive. When you spend enough time in the swamps, you get used to the shine of gator eyes in the light. But this was different. This glare was steady and unblinking, two spotlights that cut through the shadows like they were electric. I've heard of animals that can look like they've got a light inside them. Deep sea creatures mostly. But this was the Everglades, not the Atlantic abyss. And in that moment, the job that I was there to do, tracking down invasive species, felt suddenly ridiculous. This wasn't an animal I could tag or a species I could log. I was totally out of my league. I wanted to call out to the thing, to break the silence, to figure out what was in front of me. But my throat was totally dry, and I couldn't form the words. Then, as if it sensed what I was thinking, the creature tilted its head, the movement jerky and insect-like. That's when I saw the skin, or what passed for skin, shifting and churning over muscles and bones that moved beneath it like snakes in a bag. It was mesmerizing in the most horrifying way. I don't know how long I stood there, but at some point the spell broke. Maybe it was a noise, a distant splash of a fish, or the call of a bird that reminded me I could move, that I could breathe. I took a step back, my boots squelching in the muck. The creature mirrored my movement, also stepping backwards into the tangle of roots and darkness. I didn't wait around to see what it would do next. I backed away slowly, never taking my eyes off the spot where it had been, until the underbrush blocked my view. The sound of my own footsteps seemed thunderous at this point, a stark contrast to the suffocating silence that had been there just a few minutes ago. I was now aware of the dampness of the swamp air clinging to my skin, making my shirt stick to my back as I moved with as much calm as I could. All the while, I had the overwhelming sense that every step was being watched, calculated by something that was toying with the idea of following me. It was all I could do to keep my head together. By the time I got to my truck, the sky was a dark and the stars were out. I threw my gear into the back and climbed inside, slamming the door shut behind me. I turned the key and screamed out with happiness when the engine roared to life and the headlights cut the darkness. For a moment, I half expected to see the creature standing in the road, those unnaturally bright eyes staring me down and blocking my exit. But there was nothing, just the long dirt road winding out of the swamp. I drove without stopping, without looking in the rearview mirror, until I reached the little motel I was staying at. My hands shook as I checked in, and I must have looked a sight, with mud up to my knees and a wild look in my eyes. That night I lay in bed, staring at the ceiling as the air conditioner hummed. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw those bright, penetrating eyes. I racked my brain for some logical explanation, but science couldn't explain this for me. The next morning, I called Joe. I didn't go into details over the phone, just said I had something to discuss with him in person. We met at a small diner, a place that smelled of bacon grease and coffee. I could tell he knew something was off the moment he saw me. I figured he knew exactly what had happened. We sat down in a booth, and I laid it all out for him. He listened without interrupting, without questioning my sanity, his face filled with both concern and understanding. When I finished, he nodded slowly. "You've seen it then," he said, his voice low, "the spirit of the swamp. It's not a skinwalker, not like our legends say, but something else. It's old, and it's been disturbed by the changes, by the invasions of both animals and people." He went on to talk about balance, about respect for nature, and how he believed that the creature I'd seen was a guardian of sorts. It was a tale as old as the swamp itself, passed down in whispers and sometimes shouted as a warning. I left Florida with more questions than answers, and needless to say, the experience changed the way I approach my work, the way I enter the wilderness. I now go with a sense that I'm a guest in a world that isn't mine to control. I still think about those eyes sometimes, and I know that out there, in the swamps of the Everglades, there's something watching what humanity is up to. And that's where I'll leave it. The story of the strangest encounter I've ever had, and the lesson it taught me about the unknown. All right, so here's how it all went down. I'm a wildlife biologist, specializing in avian species, you know, birds. I was out in the backwoods of Alberta, Canada, for this project I was working on, tracking migration patterns of the lesser-known Alberta warbler. It's a pretty isolated area, far off from the usual tourist trails, just dense forests and the occasional deer path. I had my tent set up near a small clearing, surrounded by these towering pines and aspens. It was a Thursday, I remember, because I was supposed to check in with my team back in Edmonton. I'd been out there for about a week. The days were pretty routine, wake up at dawn, check the recording equipment, scout around for nests, that kind of stuff. So I was sitting by my campfire, just had my dinner, canned beans and some jerky, nothing fancy, just stuff that keeps for a long time without refrigeration. I had cleaned up and was then flipping through my notes, and that's when I heard this weird sound coming from the woods. At first, it didn't even register with me. I only realized that I had heard it in retrospect, after everything else happened. At the time, I figured maybe it was just the wind, or a tree branch breaking off, so I didn't pay much mind to it at first. But then it happened again, closer this time. Now it was starting to settle in that something might be happening. So I grabbed my flashlight and shone it towards the trees, thinking maybe it's some lost hiker or a stray dog. But no, there was nothing. The sound stopped as soon as the light hit the trees. I thought it was strange, sure, but animals get spooked by light all the time and get quiet, so I wasn't too worried. I settled back down by the fire, reading a bit more and just staring and thinking, trying to relax my brain, but that's when I saw it. Across the clearing, just at the edge of what I could clearly see, there was this figure. I instantly knew that something was strange about it, because it stood on two legs and its back was kind of hunched over. Its body was covered in this thick, dark fur, and it had these deep, reflective eyes that caught the light from my fire. I know I looked like a deer in the headlights at that point. I was wide-eyed and just staring back at it. I mean, what do you even do in that situation? I deal with birds, not whatever this large mammal was. It didn't move, just stood there, watching me. I couldn't tell if it was curious or sizing me up as its next meal. But most of all, I was just thinking that it is something that's not supposed to be there. I slowly reach for my camera. I always keep it nearby. Occupational habit. But as soon as I moved, that thing, it let out this low, rumbling sound. Not aggressive, but like a warning. I stopped. Didn't want to provoke it. Didn't want my movements to snap it into attack mode. This creature, it had this presence. Like it was fully aware of me, but also kind of indifferent. Its eyes, they weren't just animal-like. There was something more to them. Something almost human, but not quite. I was hoping it knew that I wasn't there to harm it. And it and I do think that it seemed to get that. The creature's posture eventually relaxed slightly. Not as tense as before. Then, it did something that totally threw me off. It tilted its head, kind of like a curious dog. But slower, more deliberate. I lowered my flashlight a bit, not wanting to blind it or scare it off. That's when I noticed more details. Its fur was matted in places, like it had been living wild for a long time. There were scars too, old ones, across its arms, and what I could see of its chest. This creature had lived quite a life, a tough one at that. It made another sound then, softer than before, almost like a huff. It wasn't threatening, more like it was communicating. I didn't dare move, didn't dare make a sound. I just watched, completely in awe. Then, it turned and started to walk away. But here's the kicker. As it walked, it glanced back over its shoulder, directly at me. That look, I can't explain it. But it felt like an acknowledgement, like it was letting me know that I was okay, that it was fine with me being there. As it disappeared into the trees, the forest seemed to come alive again. Sounds of the night animals came back, as they, too, now seemed to feel safe. I sat there by the fire, my mind racing and thinking. I spent the rest of the night replaying that encounter over and over in my head. By the time dawn broke, I'd made up my mind that I wanted to find out more about this creature. Not to expose it or anything, but to understand it. If this thing was living out here, undetected, what else might be out there? Were there more of them? The next few days, I tried to go about my work, tracking the warblers, but my mind was elsewhere. I kept an eye out for any signs of the creature, any tracks or markings. I literally could barely concentrate on my job, but I didn't see it again, even though I felt like it was around, like it was watching or something. I looked into any accounts of people seeing something similar in the area. The more I learned, the more I realized how little anyone really knows about the wilderness and everything that calls it home. We humans like to think we've mapped every inch of this planet, but there are places, wild, untouched places, where the unknown still lives. So, yeah, that's my story. I don't have solid proof, no clear photos or anything, but what I experienced, what I felt, that was real. It's out there, whatever it is, living its life. Hidden away from us as much as possible. And maybe that's for the best, because they deserve to live their lives the way they want. At least that's what I think about it. I'm not what you'd call a typical guy. And with that, I don't have a typical job. My job? I'm an antique restorer, specializing in old mechanical devices. Think clocks, music boxes, that sort of thing. It's a niche skill, but I've always been fascinated by the intricacies of mechanisms that have stood the test of time. This job takes me to all sorts of places, usually old homes or estates where forgotten treasures lie, gathering dust in attics and basements. This story takes place in late September, on a vast property in rural Montana. I was there because the owner, an elderly gentleman who had recently passed away, had an extensive collection of antique clocks. His family wanted them appraised and restored where necessary before they were auctioned off. The estate was a sprawling piece of land, with dense woods bordering it, and a few dilapidated structures scattered around. One of these was an old barn, standing lopsidedly in a field. Its wood was gray and weathered from years of harsh winters. I arrived late in the afternoon. The plan was to stay overnight in the main house, start work early in the morning. My truck, loaded with tools and equipment, rumbled along the gravel path leading to the barn. I figured I'd check out the barn first. These places sometimes hide the most unexpected antiques. Something about that barn felt weird to me, weirder than other barns I've rummaged through. Not in a haunted house movie kind of way, but there was a tangible sense of strangeness. As I neared the barn, a soft scraping noise came from within. The rational part of me thought it was just animals inside who had taken over, but the rest of me wasn't convinced, based mostly on the sound. I hesitated, then pushed the creaking barn doors open. The light coming through the broken wood made everything look a bit distorted, and at first it was hard to make anything out. But then, as my eyes adjusted, the sight that greeted me was something out of a dark fantasy. In the dim light filtering through the cracks in the barn, I saw it. A creature, impossibly tall and thin, with skin like pale, dead leaves. It was hunched over, almost as if it was in pain, and its arms were unnaturally long, fingers ending in sharp, talon-like nails. But it was the creature's eyes that held me, a piercing, glowing yellow, glowing in the dim light. I knew instantly that I was looking at a crawler, something I'd heard in passing tales, but never believed to be real. Yet, here it was. The creature didn't move towards me, and I slowly began to back away, not wanting to provoke it. Its gaze followed me, but it remained still. These creatures were the stuff of local legends. They were said to inhabit remote, forgotten places, lurking in the shadows, always just out of sight. The crawler's presence was overwhelming. Despite its frightening appearance, it didn't seem aggressive. It just stood there, observing me with an intense curiosity that felt almost human. Its head tilted slightly, as if trying to decipher what I was, much like I was trying to understand it. Its skin, a ghastly pale, stretched tightly over its bony frame. The ribs were visible under the skin, each breath it took causing them to rise and fall slowly. The arms, unnaturally long, hung by its sides, ending in elongated fingers that scraped the ground. But those eyes, those unblinking glowing yellow eyes, held an intelligence that contradicted its monstrous form. I couldn't move, not just out of fear, but out of a strange sense of awe. Here was a creature that defied all logic, a being that shouldn't exist, yet it stood mere feet from me. Its gaze never left mine. Then, breaking the silence, the crawler emitted a low, rasping sound. It wasn't a growl, but something more complex, almost like a form of communication. I obviously didn't understand it, but the sound sent shivers down my spine. Then the air in the barn grew colder, or maybe it was just my nerves. I realized then that I had to put distance between myself and this creature. As I stepped back, the crawler mimicked my movement, retreating further into the shadows of the barn. I backed out of the barn, never turning my back on the creature. As the daylight faded outside, the crawler's figure became a part of the shadows, indistinguishable from the darkness. The rest of the night passed in a blur of restless thoughts, but that next morning, I found myself drawn back to the barn. A part of me needed to see the crawler again. As I approached the barn, the morning light revealed more of its dilapidated state. The wood creaked with each step I took. I half expected the crawler to be there, waiting for me, but the barn was empty, save for the lingering sense of its presence. I spent the day working in the main house, cataloging and examining the antique clocks. Yet, my mind kept drifting back to the barn. As evening approached, I decided to take one last walk around the property. The sun was setting, casting long shadows across the fields. The air had a chill to it. Or again, maybe it was my nerves. I found myself standing at the edge of the woods, looking into the dense thicket of trees. It was then I heard it again, the same low, rasping sound I had heard from the crawler. It was coming from the woods now. Without really thinking, I followed the sound, my feet carrying me deeper into the forest. The trees grew closer together, the canopy above blocking out the remaining light. The sound grew louder, more insistent, and then there it was, standing at the edge of a clearing. Its eyes glowed in the dim light, and it watched me approach. This time, there was a sense of recognition, as if it remembered me from the barn. I stopped a few feet away, unsure of what to do next. The crawler tilted its head, studying me. Then, slowly, it stepped forward, closing the distance between us. My heart raced, but I didn't move. It stopped right in front of me, its towering form looming over me. For a long moment, we just stood there, human and cryptid, facing each other. Then, with a movement that was almost gentle, the crawler reached out with one of its long arms. I flinched instinctively, but it merely touched my shoulder, its fingers surprisingly warm against my skin. In that touch, I felt a rush of emotions, curiosity, loneliness, a deep unspoken understanding. The moment was brief. The crawler withdrew its hand and stepped back, melting into the shadows of the forest. I was left standing there alone. As I walked back to the house, I knew that this experience would change me forever. I had come to this property as an antique restorer, but I was leaving with a story that was more extraordinary than any object I had ever worked on. The crawler, a creature of myth and legend, was now a part of my life's experiences. All right, so let me tell you about what happened to me the one and only time I went to the Finger Lakes in New York. I'm not the kind of person who believes in spooky stuff, but this experience I had, it still messes with my head whenever I think about it. I was in Ithaca, New York for a conference. I work in IT, so it's not like I'm out there looking for adventures or anything. After a couple of days cooped up in meetings and stuffy hotel rooms, I needed a break. A colleague of mine, Jenna, she's into all this nature and hiking stuff, suggested we should visit one of the Finger Lakes. She said it was beautiful, peaceful, a good place to unwind. So, we rented a car and headed out the next day when we had a free afternoon scheduled. We chose to go to Seneca Lake, one of the larger Finger Lakes. It's known for its stunning views and clear waters. We arrived there mid-afternoon. The plan was simple. Take a walk along the lake, maybe rent a kayak if we felt like it. Jenna was all excited, taking in the scenery, talking about how she used to go camping all the time with her family. Me? I was just glad to be out of the conference room. By the time we were walking along the lake, the day started winding down. It was quiet, except for the occasional sound of fish jumping out of the water. Jenna was a bit ahead, trying to find a good spot to watch the sunset. That's when I saw it, or rather them. There, by the edge of the lake, partially hidden by some bushes, were these two glowing yellow eyes. They were unlike anything I had ever seen. I'm no wildlife expert, and you now know that I don't even like the outdoors, but I know what deer, raccoons, and even owls look like. This was different. The eyes were too big, too bright. For a second, I thought it was someone messing with us. Maybe some kids with weird flashlights or something. But then, the creature, because that's the only way I can describe it, stepped out of the shadows. It was tall, way taller than a person, with a lean, muscular body covered in scales. They shimmered in the fading light, like some sort of weird armor. Its head was elongated, sort of like a lizard or a snake, with a sharp, pointed jaw. Those eyes, man, they just kept staring at me. I couldn't move. I wanted to shout out to Jenna, to run, to do something, but I was stuck. The creature tilted its head, almost like it was curious. Then, it took a step toward me. Just one step, slow and deliberate. That's when the spell broke. I turned and ran towards Jenna, not even daring to look back. When I reached her, I was panting, my heart racing. I tried to explain, but my words came out all jumbled. Jenna just looked at me, confused. She tried to calm me down, suggesting maybe I was dehydrated. But I knew what I saw, even though there was no good way to tell her about it. We decided to head back to the car. Jenna kept talking, trying to lighten the mood, but I barely heard her. My mind was in a whirl, replaying the encounter over and over. As we walked, the shadows around us seemed to grow longer, more menacing. I kept glancing back. half expecting to see that thing, whatever it was, following us. Every sound in the forest made me jump. I tried to tell myself it was just my imagination, that I was just spooked and seeing things that weren't there. But deep down, I knew it wasn't. As we reached the car, I felt a wave of relief. I was shaking as I fumbled with the keys, eager to get inside and lock the doors. Jenna was looking at me with concern, asking if I was okay. I just nodded, not trusting my voice. I didn't want to sound crazy, but I also didn't want to lie to her. The drive back was mostly silent. Jenna made a few attempts at conversation, but she could tell I wasn't in the mood to talk. I kept replaying the encounter in my head, trying to rationalize it. But the more I thought about it, the less sense it made. The way it moved, the size, the eyes, it was too real, too animalistic to be a person in a suit. As we got back to the hotel, I excused myself quickly. I said I was tired, which wasn't a lie. But more than that, I needed time to think, to process what I had seen. Back in my room, I sat on the bed, my mind racing. I pulled out my laptop and started searching for anything that could explain what I had seen. I looked up local wildlife, myths, legends, anything and everything. But nothing matched the creature I had encountered. Hours passed as I fell down the rabbit hole of internet searches and forum posts. Some people talked about seeing strange creatures in the woods, but nothing like what I had seen. I felt alone, isolated in my experience. It was like I had seen something that wasn't supposed to exist. Finally, exhaustion took over, and I fell into a restless sleep. My dreams were haunted by yellow eyes and scales, the sound of something moving through the underbrush. I woke up several times, my heart pounding, the fear still fresh. The next morning, I met Jenna for breakfast. She could tell something was off. I debated telling her about my late-night research, but I decided against it. I didn't want her to worry, and I didn't want to sound like I was losing it. The rest of the trip passed in a blur. I went through the motions, attending the last day of the conference, but my mind was elsewhere. I kept thinking about the creature, about what it meant. Was I the only one who had ever seen it? Was it dangerous? By the end of the week, the conference was over, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. As we boarded the plane to head home, I looked out the window at the landscape below. The Finger Lakes region was beautiful, serene from above, but I knew that somewhere down there, something unexplained was lurking. And the worst part was, I had no idea what it was. All right, let's dive into this. I'm going to tell you about something that happened to me a while back. This isn't your usual, I saw something weird in the woods kind of story. It's a bit out there, but I swear every word of it is true. So, I'm a security guard, right? But not the kind you're probably thinking of. I work at Pearson International Airport in Toronto. Yeah, the big one. Most of my shifts are at night, which suits me just fine. Less crowd, less hassle. You get to see some interesting stuff at airports late at night. But nothing, and I mean nothing, could have prepared me for that night. It was a Tuesday, around 2 a.m. Weirdly quiet, even for that hour. My job mostly involves patrolling the less busy sections of the terminal, making sure no one's trying to catch a nap in a closed coffee shop or something. I was walking past one of those big windows looking out onto the runway when I saw it. At first, I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. It was this figure, I guess, standing right there on the tarmac. Now, people aren't supposed to be out there, obviously, especially not at 2 a.m. This figure, it was odd, not like anyone I'd ever seen. It was sort of shimmering, like looking at something through a heat wave. I figured maybe it was just a reflection from the window or something. So, I rub my eyes, look again, but it's still there. This time, it's closer to the window, almost like it moved while I wasn't looking. I decided to head outside, you know, to check it out. Protocol and all that. I made my way through the terminal, out one of the side exits that leads onto the runway. It's chilly, and there's this faint mist in the air. I'm walking towards where I saw the figure, flashlight in hand, trying not to let my imagination get the better of me. As I get closer, the air felt heavier, and there was this faint, almost electric buzz in the air. I keep moving forward, and that's when I see it clearly for the first time. This figure, it's definitely not human. It's tall, unnaturally so, and its proportions are all wrong. Long limbs, a head that's too big, and it's sort of glowing. Not like a light bulb, but more like it had this inner light, a pale blue that seemed to pulse gently. I'm staring at this thing, and it turns to look at me. It had eyes, but they were just darker spots on its already dark face. No features, no mouth, nothing. Just those eyes. We're looking at each other, and I swear it felt like it was looking right into me, not just at me. Then, it starts moving towards me. Not walking, but sort of floating. It's smooth, like it's not even touching the ground. I'm freaking out internally, but my feet are glued to the spot. It stops, maybe 10 feet away from me. And that's when the weirdest thing happens. It starts changing, shifting. Its shape becomes less defined, more wavy, like you're looking at something underwater. And then, it speaks. Not out loud, but in my head. I hear this voice, clear as day, saying, "Do not fear." That's it. Just those three words. But the way it said it, it was calming, almost soothing. I didn't feel scared anymore. Confused, yeah, but not scared. It just stood there for a few seconds, this blue, glowing, shape-shifting thing. And then it started to fade, like it was being absorbed into the air around it. Within seconds, it was gone, just vanished into thin air. I stood there for I don't know how long, trying to make sense of what I just saw. Eventually, I snapped out of it. I start walking back to the terminal, my mind racing a mile a minute. I mean, you don't just see something like that and go back to checking doors and windows, right? As I'm walking back, I keep glancing over my shoulder, half expecting to see that figure again. But there's nothing, just the empty runway and the distant lights of the city. I reach the terminal and go inside, feeling this weird mix of relief and disappointment. The rest of my shift passes in a blur. I'm there, but I'm not really there, you know? My mind keeps replaying that encounter over and over. I finish my shift and head home. I live alone, which is how I like it. But that morning, the apartment feels too quiet. Every little noise makes me jump. I try to get some sleep, but it's no use. My brain just won't shut off. The next night, I'm back at the airport. Part of me was hoping to see that figure again, but another part was scared stiff at the thought. The night starts off normal enough. I do my rounds, check the usual spots, but there's this underlying tension, like I'm waiting for something to happen. Around the same time as the previous night, 2 a.m., I find myself back at that same window, looking out at the runway. I don't see anything at first, but then, there it is. The figure, standing in the same spot as before. Only this time it's different. It's not just standing there, it's moving, pacing almost, like it's waiting for something. Or someone. I don't hesitate this time. I head straight for the side exit, pushing the door open and stepping outside. The air's cold, and that same mist is hanging in the air. I walk towards the figure, more determined now. As I get closer, it stops moving and turns to face me. That same shimmering, glowing appearance. But it seems less intimidating now. More familiar? It speaks again, in my head. "You came back." The voice is the same, calm and soothing. It's weird, but I find myself nodding, like it's the most natural thing in the world to be having a telepathic conversation with a glowing figure on an airport runway. "We need your help," it says. This catches me off guard. Help? With what? I'm just a security guard, not some kind of hero. But before I can say anything, it continues. "There's something happening. Something that affects your world and ours." I'm about to ask what it means when suddenly, there's this sound. It's like a low hum, but it feels like it's coming from everywhere and nowhere at the same time. The figure seems to react to it, its light pulsing faster. "They're coming," it says, and there's a sense of urgency in its voice now. I look around, trying to see who they are, but there's nothing. Just the empty runway and the night. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I see them, shapes similar to the figure, emerging from the mist. They're moving towards us, and there's something distinctly menacing about them. The figure beside me shifts, its form blurring and changing. "Protect yourself," it says, and then it's moving forward to meet the other figures. I'm left standing there, watching as this surreal scene unfolds in front of me. The figures collide, and there's this burst of light. It's blinding, and I have to shield my eyes. When I look again, they're all gone. The figure I was talking to and the others. I'm alone on the runway, with nothing but the cold night air and a million questions swirling in my head. I head back inside, not sure what to do or think. The rest of my shift is a haze. I don't tell anyone about what happened. I mean, how could I? Who would believe a story like that? So, that's it. That's my story. A ghost, an alien, a figment of my imagination. I don't know. But it happened, and it's something I'll never forget. So, believe it or not, I work as a wind turbine technician. Not your everyday job, I know. I work on those massive windmills you see in open fields. This particular story happened in the plains of Oklahoma, near the Wichita Mountains. It's a pretty isolated area, which makes it perfect for wind farms, but not so great when things get weird. My job involves a lot of climbing and maintenance work on the turbines. It's usually just me in the sky up there. The rest of the guys are often on the ground. I like working in the solitude, honestly. It gives me time to think, and the view is unbeatable if you're not afraid of heights. But there was this one evening that changed my whole perspective. It was later in the day, probably around 5:30 p.m., and I was finishing up a routine repair that had taken me a bit of extra time to finish. I was about to climb down when I heard this sound. It wasn't the usual sounds you would hear up there. I climbed partway down the turbine, feeling a bit uneasy. The sound had made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I figured I might have just been tired, hearing things after a long day. I looked around and scanned the area, and within minutes, I saw it. There, in the dim light of my headlamp, was this creature. It was canine, sure, but it was unlike any dog or wolf. It was massive, easily the size of a small bear, but with a sleek, muscular build. Its fur was pitch black, but all I could focus on seeing was its mouth and protruding teeth. It just stood there, just far enough away that it was hard to see it in the fading light. But I could tell that it was watching me. I could feel its gaze, heavy and intent. I didn't dare move. Then it howled again, that same sound that I had heard above. It's weird, but in that moment, it felt like the sound wasn't just traveling through the air. It was like it was inside me, vibrating through my bones. I've never experienced anything like it. After it turned away, I thought that would be the end of it. But as I started to pack up my tools, I heard the sound of movement. It was subtle at first, just the faintest sound. I froze, listening hard, hoping I was just being paranoid. But then it became clearer, the sound of something large moving slowly, deliberately. I flicked my headlamp on and turned around. The light cut through the darkness, but all I saw were the shadows of the wind turbines and the rolling plains. Where in the world could this be coming from? I hurried down the rest of the ladder, my hands shaking in a way that I had to concentrate to keep my grip. As I reached the bottom, I glanced around and that's when I saw it again. The creature was standing near the top of a small hill, silhouetted against the moon. It was just watching me, its red eyes glowing in the darkness. I immediately got into my truck and drove out of there as fast as I could. The whole drive back, I kept checking my mirrors, half expecting to see it following me. But there was nothing. The next few days were rough. I couldn't shake the image of those burning red eyes. I kept telling myself it was maybe a stray dog with an unusual appearance. But the way it moved, the intelligence in its eyes, it didn't fit. I talked to a guy at the local office, casually bringing up the topic of wildlife in the area. One old-timer, a guy who'd lived in the area his whole life, had a different look on his face than the others I talked to. When I mentioned the red eyes, he went quiet. He told me to be careful, said that some things out there don't like to be disturbed. He wouldn't say more than that, but the warning in his voice was clear. I left the office that day feeling a mix of frustration and unease. The encounter and the old man's reaction had stirred a deep curiosity in me. A few nights later, I found myself driving back to the site. I can't fully explain why I did it, but I first told myself it would just be a drive-by. It was like something was pulling me back there. However, when I arrived, I wanted to get out and look. I parked a distance away from the turbine, deciding I shouldn't get too close. I walked slowly towards the hill where I'd last seen the creature. Every sense was heightened. Every shadow seemed to move. But there was nothing. Except I reached the top of the hill and looked out over the plains. The moon was bright, and I sat there for a while, just watching and listening. But the creature, the hellhound, it didn't appear. I started to visit the site more often, always at night. I never saw the creature again, but I felt its presence. Months passed, and my nightly visits became a routine. I never told anyone about them, knowing how it would sound. But I couldn't keep away. It was my secret. Then, one night, as I sat on the hill, I heard the howl again. It was far off. I didn't feel fear this time, though, just a sense of closure. I told myself it was as if the creature was saying goodbye. After that night, I was able to stop going to the site. It felt like that chapter had closed for me. I still work as a wind turbine technician, but I've never experienced anything like seeing that creature again. I don't know what that thing was exactly, or why it showed itself to me. But anyway, that's my story. Take it as you will, a brush with the supernatural, or just a crazy guy trying to make sense of the unexplainable. But it's a part of me now, a story etched into my life in a way that I don't think I'll ever be able to erase. Alright, so here's this thing that happened to me not too long ago. I'm a map surveyor, which basically means I spend a lot of time out in the sticks, verifying boundaries, and making sure the world your GPS shows matches the actual ground. It's a job that takes me all over the place, but this time, I was out in the north woods of Minnesota, a stone's throw from the Canadian border. Dense forests, the kind that can make the noonday sun look like twilight, and silence so heavy you could almost feel the weight of it. It was mid-September, and I was there to survey some private land that hadn't been assessed in decades. The owner was some city guy looking to slap down a cabin or two, maybe a fancy lodge for folks looking to disconnect. I'd set up my base camp near a clearing, about half a mile from what you could loosely call civilization. I'd been out there for 3 days already, and everything was as normal as it gets. Trees, mosquitoes the size of quarters, and the occasional deer giving me the stink eye. But that evening, things started off. Weird. I was coming back from a day's work, GPS and map in hand, when I noticed the woods were silent. And I mean silent. Not even the wind was making noise. And for anyone who spends time outdoors, you know that's not just eerie. It's wrong. I reached my tent as the last light was fading. I'm not much of a fire bug, but I figured a little campfire might cut through the weirdness. That's when I heard it. A crack, like a heavy foot stepping on a thick branch. But it was rhythmic, deliberate. I froze, rationalizing that it could be any large animal. But deep down, I knew the woods here, and I knew the animals. They don't move like that. I stayed still, listening as the steps seemed to circle around, keeping just out of sight. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. I'm not a superstitious guy, but I swear it felt like the forest was also alive and waiting to see what this thing would do. And then, I saw it, or at least the shadow of it. It was tall, unnaturally tall, with limbs too long for its body, moving with a sort of jerky grace that made my stomach drop. It was like my brain couldn't fully process what I was seeing. This was no moose, that's for sure. It stopped, and I swear it turned its head straight towards me. I couldn't make out features, but the way it stood there, stock still, I knew it was looking right at me. I thought about every wildlife encounter training I'd ever had, but nothing in those manuals prepared me for this. My mind screamed to run, but that's the last thing you should do. So I did the only thing that felt right. I slowly backed towards my tent, not taking my eyes off where that thing stood. When I got to the tent, I fumbled with the zipper, slipped inside, and grabbed the only weapon I had, a hatchet for chopping firewood. It was a solid piece, with a handle worn smooth from use and a blade that caught the light as I pulled it free from its sheath. I sat there, my back against the nylon wall of the tent, clutching the hatchet like some kind of lifeline. The thing, whatever it was, had a presence to it that just pressed against the fabric of the night. I could feel it out there, could almost hear the soft tread of its feet on the pine needles, each step a deliberate punctuation in the night silence. The waiting was the worst part. Every small sound was amplified 100-fold. The slight rustle of leaves, the settling of the ground under the weight of the unknown, the creak of tree branches above. It all melded into a cacophony of paranoia. I strained my ears for any hint, any clue of what this creature was doing. Was it waiting for me to emerge, to let down my guard? Or was it just toying with me, its motives as unreadable as the shadowed forest that lay beyond my thin veil of protection? Minutes, or was it hours, passed like this? My grip on the hatchet never wavered, even as my arm grew numb and my eyes heavy with the need for sleep that wouldn't come. Every time I blinked, I half expected to open my eyes to find that thing peering into my soul, with eyes I couldn't see but felt all the same. At some point, the logical part of my brain started to kick in, trying to rationalize the encounter. It had to be an animal, I told myself. Some creature of flesh and blood, not the boogeyman come to life from the whispered tales of loggers and hunters. But then I remembered the silence, the oppressive, absolute silence, and no animal I knew of commanded the forest to mute itself like that. Dawn broke with a reluctant trickle of light, and with it, a return to the familiar sounds of the woods. Birds started their morning chorus, and small creatures skittered through the underbrush. The normalcy of it all felt like a slap in the face. I emerged from the tent, hatchet still in hand, to a world that looked the same but felt irrevocably altered. There were no tracks, no sign of disturbance, no evidence that anything out of the ordinary had happened. But the image of that elongated shadow, the feel of being watched by something utterly foreign, was burned into my mind with a clarity that no lack of physical proof could erase. That's the thing about the woods. They keep their secrets well. And that morning, as I packed up my camp with hands that still trembled ever so slightly, I couldn't shake the feeling that I had just skimmed the surface of one of those secrets, a tale that was never meant for the likes of me. This happened to me when I was staying at the Athenaeum Hotel in Chautauqua, New York. You might wonder what brought me there to this small town in the westernmost part of New York. Well, first off, I'm a history enthusiast, particularly fascinated by places with a rich past. And the Athenaeum Hotel, it's like a treasure trove of history. Built in the 1880s, it's seen its fair share of events and famous guests. I was there to soak in the historical ambience of the entire Chautauqua institution, and maybe feel a bit of the past come alive. But what I experienced was way beyond anything I expected. It was a typical autumn evening when I arrived. The hotel, with its Victorian charm, looked even more impressive against the backdrop of the setting sun. The reds and oranges of the leaves created a picturesque scene, the kind you'd see on a postcard. I checked in, and the staff were as friendly as you'd expect in a place that prides itself on hospitality. My room was on the third floor, overlooking the lake. The view? Stunning. I decided to explore the hotel a bit before dinner. The corridors were lined with old photographs and paintings, each telling a story of a bygone era. There was this one picture, though, a black and white photo of the hotel staff from the early 1900s. Everyone was looking at the camera, except for one person at the back. He was looking off to the side, almost as if he saw something intriguing, or maybe disturbing. I didn't think much of it then. Dinner was uneventful, but enjoyable. The dining hall was grand, with chandeliers and ornate decorations. Afterward, I thought a walk around the grounds would be nice. The air was crisp, and the rustle of the leaves under my feet was oddly comforting. I returned to my room around 9 p.m. That's when things started to get strange. I was reading a book when I heard it, a faint sound, like someone whispering. I figured it was just the hotel settling, or maybe sound carrying from another room. But it got louder, clearer. It sounded like someone was right outside my door, whispering words I couldn't quite make out. I went to the door, opened it, and peeked outside. The corridor was empty. The whispering stopped. I shrugged it off as my imagination, the result of being in such an old building with so much history. Back in my room, I settled into bed, ready to call it a night. That's when I saw him. In the corner of my room, near the window overlooking the lake, there was a man. He was dressed in an old-fashioned uniform, like the ones the staff in that old photograph wore. His face was hard to make out, but he seemed to be looking right at me. I blinked, thinking my eyes were playing tricks on me. But when I opened them again, he was still there, standing motionless, just staring. My heart raced, and a million thoughts ran through my head. Was this a prank? Some kind of hotel gimmick to spook the guests? I mustered up the courage to speak. "Hello?" My voice sounded far more timid than I intended. No response. He just stood there unmoving. I reached for the lamp on the nightstand, thinking light would surely dispel this illusion. But as my hand touched the lamp, he just faded away, like smoke disappearing into thin air. I sat there stunned. I didn't know what to think. Was it a ghost? My logical side battled with what I'd just seen. Ghosts don't exist, right? But then, what did I just witness? I didn't sleep much that night. Every creak and whisper of the hotel seemed amplified. By morning, I was a mix of exhausted and intrigued. I needed answers. I had to know more about this figure, this apparition that seemed so real yet so impossible. I started my day with a visit to the hotel's front desk. I casually asked about the history of the hotel and if there were any interesting stories, you know, trying not to sound too eager or spooked. The lady at the desk, Mrs. Hargrove, was a well of information. She'd been working there for decades and knew every nook and cranny of the place. She talked about the hotel's founding, the famous guests, the renovations. But when I subtly steered the conversation towards any unusual occurrences or stories, her demeanor changed. She hesitated, then smiled politely and said that old buildings often have many stories, some truer than others. Unsatisfied, I decided to do some digging on my own. I spent the morning in the Smith Memorial Library up the hill by Bestor Plaza. It was a beautiful brick building filled with books along with lots of local history, old newspapers, and journals. I pored over them, looking for anything that could explain my encounter. That's when I stumbled upon an old journal from the early 1900s. It belonged to a former employee of the hotel, a man named Thomas. As I read through his entries, I was more than intrigued. He wrote about his time working at the hotel, the guests, the daily routines. But there were several entries about a fellow employee, a man named Edward. Edward was well-liked, hard-working, but there was something off about him. He was often caught staring into space, whispering to himself. Then, the entries took a darker turn. Thomas wrote about a tragic incident. Edward had drowned in the lake. His death was ruled an accident, but Thomas suspected otherwise. He wrote about how Edward was behaving oddly in the days leading up to his death, whispering more, looking scared. Strangely, I felt a connection between Edward and the figure I saw in my room. Could it be him? Was I seeing things? Or was there some truth to this? I needed more information. I remembered the photograph in the corridor. I went back to look at it, focusing on the man at the back who wasn't looking at the camera. There was something familiar about him. I took a closer look at the name scribbled below the photo. Edward. My heart raced. It was him, the man from my room. But how? And why? The rest of the day was a blur of emotions and thoughts. I walked around the hotel, half expecting to see Edward again, but he didn't appear. By evening, I was exhausted, both mentally and physically. I had dinner in a daze, barely tasting the food. As I headed back to my room, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. The hotel, with its creaky floors and whispering winds, felt alive with secrets. Back in my room, I sat on the bed, lost in thought. The events of the past 24 hours seemed surreal. I was a rational person, but how could I rationalize what I'd seen and felt? Then it happened again, the whispering. I looked towards the corner of the room, half expecting to see Edward, but there was nothing, just the soft glow of the moonlight through the window. The next morning, I woke up determined to find some closure. I couldn't leave Chautauqua with this mystery hanging over me. I decided to visit the local historical society. If anyone had more information about Edward or any other unusual occurrences at the Athenaeum, it would be them. The historical society was a small building, a few blocks from the hotel. The lady there, Mrs. Miller, was a walking encyclopedia of local history. When I mentioned the Athenaeum and Edward, her eyes lit up. She remembered hearing stories about him from her grandparents. According to Mrs. Miller, Edward was a bit of an enigma. He was quiet, kept to himself, but was known for his eerie habit of talking to himself. Some said he claimed to hear voices. After his death, there were whispers among the hotel staff about his ghost haunting the place, particularly the room he used to stay in. Guess which room that was? Mine. I felt a mix of fear and fascination. It was becoming increasingly hard to dismiss what I had experienced as mere coincidences. Mrs. Miller suggested I visit the local cemetery, where Edward was buried. Maybe paying my respects would bring some peace, both to me and possibly to Edward's spirit. The cemetery was old and a bit overgrown, but it had a serene atmosphere. I found Edward's grave after a bit of searching. It was a simple stone, weathered by time. Standing there, I didn't know what to expect. Would I feel something, see something? But there was just silence and a gentle breeze. I spoke softly, not really sure what to say. I acknowledged his life, his untimely death, and the fact that he might be the one I encountered at the hotel. I expressed my hope that he was at peace. Returning to the hotel, I felt a strange sense of calm. Whether it was the visit to the grave or just talking about it, something inside me had shifted. I decided to spend one more night in the room to see if anything would happen. That night, as I lay in bed, the whispers returned, but this time they were softer, almost like a sigh. I didn't feel scared. Instead, I felt a sense of understanding, of empathy. I whispered back, "I hope you find peace, Edward." I don't know if it was my imagination or something more, but the air in the room shifted. It felt lighter, and the whispering faded away. I left the Athenaeum the next morning with a story that I still struggle to fully comprehend. Was it a ghost, a lingering spirit of a troubled soul? Or was it just a series of strange coincidences fueled by my imagination and the history of the hotel? Whatever it was, my encounter at the Athenaeum Hotel in Chautauqua, New York, remains one of the most intriguing experiences of my life. It's a story that I'll carry with me, a reminder that sometimes